RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
So, the open letter sent to all members of Parliament from more than 400 church leaders urging the government to vote down the Treaty Principles Bill. And on RCR this morning to talk about this is Dr. Alastair Rees, an adjunct fellow at the University of Otago with expertise in post-colonialism, theology, history and tikanga Māori. He's involved in efforts to promote reconciliation between Māori and Pākehā and exploring understandings of what an indigenous form of Christianity might look like. Dr. Rees, welcome on RCR. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Okay. David Seymour says the pushback by churches is undemocratic. What do you say to that?
Oh, well, simply, I just don't understand it.
Well, in what way?
I don't understand what's undemocratic about people expressing their view or their opinion.
Yeah, maybe he's referring to some sort of separation that there should be between church and state, maybe, even though it could be vague.
Yeah. Who knows?
Right. So what do you make of this letter? What does it tell us? What's the message to us all?
I think it tells us that there's quite a few people who are fired up about something, and that a lot of people who normally probably wouldn't, you know, put their names to something have been moved to do that. So I think, Paul, what it's suggesting is that, well, at least at surface level, that there's a lot of people who hold positions of responsibility who feel so moved by what they're seeing or experiencing, feeling or thinking, that they've been they've agreed to put their name to this this letter.
What are they feeling, thinking and seeing, though?
It's like difficult for me, of course, to, you know, to generalize on what everyone's feeling. I can bring that down to a personal level.
Okay, that's
fine. I use this term, Paul, for me. I understand something of, Māori use this word called mamai. It's a hurt. It's a pain. And some of us who have association in that world, we pick up and we're picking up the fact that there is a deep pain that has been exaggerated or, you know, provoked, or as I use it, the little phrase that I use is like a scab that's been picked off, you know. So that's the key thing, I think. It's the fact that David Seymour, in his desire to explore issues around the treaty, is seemingly operating as though it's in a historical vacuum, but it's not a historical vacuum. And that's the key issue. So I think I understand that that there is some thought that this is trying to shut down dialogue or shut down conversations. At least in my view, that's not the point at all. I'm actually very desirous that we have more conversations and explore some things around the treaty. It's about the context. The context where we are as a nation, context where we are historically, and what the I would call the social impact that this is having by dint of the fact that it's in Parliament at the moment.
Yeah, the social impact is interesting. Some might say it's a performative response. You know, sort of have a reaction, kick up a fuss, make a big deal, keep the whole thing alive. I'm not saying I think that, but that's what people say and do. And I guess logically what follows from that is, what would be an alternative way of having some sort of discussion that can lead to some sort of resolution finally?
You know, I think that's the key question. I think it's a really good question. I think that one of the roles of government is actually leadership. And I would add to that visionary leadership. So they're not only there to enact legislation, but they're also they have a duty of care for society. And I think one of the things that in the midst of the fraught history that we have, the fraught history that we share, it's a real time for visionary leadership to come forward? And that question that you've just posed, I think that goes to the heart of the question we could put to people in power or people in places who wield some authority to say, okay, let's find some suitable fora that we can actually explore some of the deep issues that are in the treaty or some of the deep issues that people have around the treaty. Paul, can I just finish? Sorry, long answer to that question.
No, yeah. Carry
but
on, please.
One of the things that I feel like is that Māori have been in this conversation for a long, long time, and people like myself, we're Johnny-come-latelys. I've been in the conversation for probably maybe 25 years or so, but relatively short time. And there are others who are actually they come into it much later than me. And so there's a lot of catch-up work to do. So we need to have these fora. We need to have these places that I believe that responsible people like the Crown could actually organise and say, okay, let's take some time, step back, and understand that the repercussions of this are very grave if we get it wrong. So,
what are the repercussions?
The repercussions are what we're seeing at the moment, and the repercussions, in simple terms, is division. We're seeing people entrenched at one or other end of the spectrums, and we're talking past each other. We're using terminologies that actually we assume that we know the meanings of them, like sovereignty, for example. We use that as though we all understand what that means. We all understand what democracy means. But these are all cultural terms, and they're loaded terms. And so, this is the deep work, Paul, that we need to do as a nation, really, to actually not just sit on the surface of these things, but actually, I think, do the hard work.
It's awkward, isn't it?
It is awkward. I think, there was an American politician who talked about an inconvenient truth. And, we have this.
Al Gore.
I think it was Al Gore. I think you're right. We have this inconvenient truth. Moana Jackson said, it's a mountain that's not going to go away. Right. So it's been here for, 175 odd years or something. It's going to be here. So it's entrenched in our midst, and I think, just to quote what I often quote this quote from Lord Bledisloe in 1834 when he gifted Waitangi to the nation. He says, "Let this be a tatau ponamu for us all," using a Māori metaphor for "let it be a doorway of reconciliation for us all." So that's my heart in this, that we actually revisit the treaty in its fundamental and its fundamental purposes as actually a mechanism of reconciliation in the first instance, and that could be somewhere we could start.
There are some things, though, even wishfully wanting them, people want a whole lot of different stuff.
Yeah.
We have to operate a society that works, that delivers on standard of living, that's health and economics and all of that. And we've got a history of doing quite well in those areas. The colonial history of New Zealand has built a reasonable country. Everybody has built a reasonable country. That needs to maintain. Can we divide it? Is it possible to divide it up or run parallel systems? Because that's kind of feels where it might go. Maybe it is possible, but that's a order of magnitude of difficulty way above what we're trying to, or how we're trying to run things now.
Yeah, I think we're actually exaggerating some of these things.
Okay.
So let me give you an example. It's a relational document. So at some point in time, the parties have got to get around the table.
Yeah,
they cannot operate mutually exclusive of each other. I know it's an unpopular choice in some cases, but I actually use the metaphor of a marriage, for example, that you have these two, very different personages who have joined together for better or for worse.
Yeah, and, till death, yeah.
Yeah, and they are bound to actually honour the other. They are bound to actually work for the betterment of the other. And they have to work on a daily basis. So this thing about, oh, we're dividing us by having, you know, Māori over there and the others over here. No, that's an exaggeration. We're actually only talking about an autonomy of our beings who then have to be committed to be interdependent with each other. Now, I know it's highfalutin sounding and it's idealistic and people, you know, say, well, you know, what has love got to do with real politics and all that? But, you know, if you don't have these aspirations, Paul, you actually go with the lowest common denominator. That's where you start. So.
So it's helpful to look at it at a very human level, as you just pointed out. And, you know, if let's say we're dealing with two individuals and I was one of them, probably I would be, and I'm trying to make it about me, but I'm just trying to get my arms around this. I would, and I knew that there was a, you know, some distance between us and we had to repair that, let's say, and get over the hurt that you talked about. The first thing I would say is I acknowledge that you're hurt, you know, and I believe that. I can see that you are. I acknowledge that. And I'm sorry for it. And I would say those things. And then I would say, well, what can we do that I can do, but you can do to repair that situation in a durable way? Is that oversimplifying?
No, I reckon you've nailed it. Honestly, I feel like, and this is what, so I'm going around the country doing meetings at the moment, Paul, you know, and one of the things that I suggest on this, what I call the reconciliatory journey, is actually the offender going to the offended party and actually saying to them, what do I need to do to have my relationship restored with you, to you? Now, that's not going to happen in a minute. I mean, if you know anything about marriage difficulties, you just imagine, then you extrapolate that out. So there's a deep listening. There's a deep listening that's involved in this, and there's a cost there that goes against our pragmatic, logical vein. But if we really want healing, then let's say you're the offended party, you need to know that you're being heard.
Yeah, but also going with that, Alistair, is I'm not directly the offender. I'm talking about, you know, ancients, you know, have come before, and I'm not directly responsible, though I'm kind of representing that.
Yeah, I think that's a misapprehension. That's kind of like the view that colonialism or colonization or whatever you call it.
Yeah, but I didn't choose where I was born. I was like literally dropped in here. I didn't ask for it.
No, that's, what do you call that? You call that fate, but you've still got to deal with the cards that are before you.
Point taken, yep.
So if you're sitting and watching injustice, there is a call upon you. And I believe that, you know, that's what you're doing tonight. You're wanting to get to the bottom of this thing.
me and many others, I do, genuinely.
Yeah.
But I want to get it to the bottom of it, knowing that I'm not being taken for an emotional ride. And I'm not saying that would happen, but I need to be sure, me being one of the parties, be sure that my willingness to say the things that I just told you before is not just seen as an opportunity to take advantage. I want to be secure in my approach, that it will be reciprocated in the same way. It's kind of what I'm thinking.
So perhaps that's where mediators come in. But one of the things I've discovered, Paul, is that not everyone's nice.
True.
you know, and some of the hurt ones are not nice either.
Yeah, well, that's what you're dealing with. Yeah.
So, you know, that's, you know, we can't just suddenly think that we have, you know, these. So you're right, there's a realism that has to sit at the table as well. And so it's, look, I'm not going to underestimate the challenges that are before us.
Do we cut ourselves a bit of time in a process like this? I mean, what's 20? I know people want things solved today. What's 10, 20 years if it means, as far as we can see out, you know, we've got it sorted? And would it be reasonable for both sides to say, okay, we realise the challenge here, it's going to take a while. Give ourselves the time and just deal with the, you know, the points along the way, but we're kind of still on a journey, and to accept that.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, some people point to 40, you know, 2140, right. 200 years. And there are some people who have some kind of dreaming aspirations that by the time we got to that point, you know, that we would have matured into this. I think that, you know, we can, I think on one level, we can congratulate ourselves. Right. And I think that we've made some progress that perhaps some other nations have yet to even begin on the journey, and have actually probably, I won't mention any names here, but that have possibly got some real difficult times ahead of them as they begin to explore some of these issues. But I love what you said. I think that's exactly what, that's why the opposition to this bill is, I think, so vocal at the moment, because that environment with the a power imbalance is not the place for us to have these discussions, not the place to be able to drill deep for all of us in these discussions.
Wow, it is quite a challenge, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking it through now, and is it an unpicking exercise or a putting Humpty back together exercise? I guess it's a mixture of everything, but it seems quite complicated to me, just thinking about it now.
It is, but I mean, the alternative that, you know, you've got to ask, you know, what's the alternative to that? And I think the alternative is not pretty. And I think the possibilities, building on what we have already, I think, you know, there's some, you know, extraordinary possibilities for us.
So for what's happening now, in your mind, is, because a lot of people, they want this sorted, and they'll see this as a victory if it goes through, of some kind of victory, you know, that we got that in, and that'll show them. Is it better than just a kind of, and it may actually happen this way because the support is only to, as I understand it, unless I've missed something, to a certain stage in Parliament, but to park it off and kind of take it off the table right now, and maybe the rhetoric becomes, actually, we got to think this through in a better way. It's going to take a bit of time. Everyone just settle down, be patient, be nice, and we'll try that. I'm just trying to think of a way of how it could be sold, actually, to the citizenry, you know.
Yeah, isn't that what leadership's about?
Yes, it is.
Isn't that what we pay our politicians?
Leadership hasn't been too good, Alistair, for quite some time. We haven't seen those leaders for a while.
Well, yeah, but have you heard that adage, you know, we get the leaders that we deserve? I think somewhere along the line, I don't know what we've done to deserve it, but this is where we find ourselves. But I think you're right. This is where it's going to end up anyway. If Chris Luxon is true to his word, he's not going to take it any further. And we've just had this, I don't know, we've had this waste of time where, because of political expediency and the coalition trend, you know, the coalition workings, that's what's ended up. And this is what's been the result.
Alistair, what would Jesus do?
Yeah, no, I know that.
I don't mean it's not a gotcha. It's not a gotcha,
no,
but I just.
No, you know. I know that the certain tongue in cheek in that question, but I also respect the sincerity behind it as well. I think there's two words that come to me when you ask that question. One is he calls a spade a spade, right? And he will call out injustice when he sees it. That's on the one hand, but he calls us to forgive on the other.
Right.
So we have this tension, I think, operating, and we have one side of the coin as a call for justice. And I want to suggest, and it's difficult for someone who's part of a perpetrating culture to suggest this, but that ultimately that forgiveness is going to have to be sitting somewhere around the table as well, because we will never otherwise solve the issues of dollars and cents and acres of land. And that, even though I'm a big believer that there has to be some integrity in that justice quarter as well.
Very well answered. Dr. Alistair Rees, it's been really interesting talking with you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.